Broadcasting live from the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in the ASTD International Convention and Expo.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton at ASTD 2014 in beautiful Washington, D.C. Stone, we're in the midst of the lunch, I guess the post-lunch crowd is gathering around. Got some paparazzi. I saw somebody taking a picture of our guests, so that means you know we got a big shot in the room here.
Absolutely. We are definitely in full stride. We obviously have, we do have a big shot with us. We have with us Vice President Talent Development for a little organization some of you may recognize called the American Cancer Society. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Miss Kimberly Currier. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. Excited to be with you guys today.
Well, we are delighted to have you. I understand that you've been here talking to some folks. But have you already presented, or are you about to go and talk to some folks?
I present today at 3 o'clock.
Oh, my. So we get just a little bit of a...
It's a sneak peek.
It's a teaser, yes.
What are you going to talk about?
We're going to talk about the work that we've done to centralize talent development with the American Cancer Society, really building a single centralized strategy that we deliver throughout the country to our staff and volunteers that still feels meaningful and local.
And that is a challenge because you have a handful of volunteers, right, that are involved with
you? Yeah, just 3 million. Small amount, yeah.
So now what is the, once you decide to do this, what is the first, second, and third thing you should be worrying about?
I think the first thing you really have to focus on is ensuring the stakeholders and identifying who those stakeholders are, you know, the staff and the volunteers, the people who have been doing training in the past that may be impacted with this change, both positively and possibly some of them might feel like it's a negative impact, and the executives who really own the outcome of the division and making sure that they know that all of their staff and volunteers will have the information, knowledge, skills, experience still, even though it's slightly less in their control in terms of how we build training. So really knowing your stakeholders, what their pain points are, how they are going to respond to the change, and really engaging them into the process and rolling them in the vision for centralized training. And then really working to make sure that everybody feels like nothing's going to slip through the cracks, that things are going to be focused and still feel really local to the American Cancer Society office, but be consistent and polished and professional and of the highest level of learning and development, delivery and design. So those are the first couple of things I think you have to focus on to do that successfully.
Now, is the strategy different when you're training for volunteers as opposed to like employees? Or is the same kind of methodology work for either group?
That's a great question. I think largely it's the same strategy. The difference is the volunteers are there by choice. And so, you know, when you have a room full of volunteers who are engaged learners, they're there because they're choosing to be there, not because it's their job to be there. You have a different level of participation. And I think you can progress through content sometimes a little bit faster with such an engaged group, whereas if you're trying to roll something out to staff who are more reluctant and you're having a behavior change that's significant for them, you have to spend a little more time practicing or building the competency. Now, that's not to say that volunteers don't sometimes struggle with the change that we're trying to implement, and we have to go back then to the original strategy that we use with staff. So I think it's a balance and really knowing your room, knowing your audience, really understanding what their pain points are and what they need to do to move forward to support the organization towards its outcomes.
Now, is there methodology, process, rigor for this kind of thing, or did you have to kind of design this thing as you were sailing it?
Well, sure, there's always methodology, and we've done a lot of work really looking at the STAR approach to org design, and part of talent development at the American Cancer Society is organizational development and organizational effectiveness, so everything that we do has an OD or an OE kind of tint or lens that we look at it through.
Right.
Really working on balancing what is training and what is training transfer and what does that mean? So all of that to say is as we began to build the centralized model, we looked at how we could design the organization to be most effective. But I think we learned a lot along the way. I've been in this role for 7 years. And so what I'm presenting on today and what I would say in general is that there's a couple of key things that you have to do regardless of how you design the organization. You have to do it before you design the organization, or where maybe in conjunction with it. That includes having a very clear business case, knowing what the landscape is in the organization and responding to it and addressing those concerns out front. Also, really having a vision for what it can look like, what it can feel like, so that people can enroll in that vision. Because if you don't have a sense of what it's going to look like and feel like, then no one else will. And how can they get in line and support you? And then you begin to understand what the work is that you're lifting and shifting into a centralized practice, and then grow that and expand it and look at it from a strategic standpoint and how you can deliver to larger business outcomes, biggest needs, anticipate challenges and problems, and meet the primary training need. And so that's really kind of fundamentally what we do before we even get into the design work.
Now, do you have any strategy of for the people that are maybe skeptical about this initiative?
Yeah, I think...
What do you call it? The skeptic strategy?
Yes, well...
Hang the heretics?
People really like it when you call them skeptics.
What do you call them?
That you've got a strategy.
Devil's advocate.
Devil's advocate.
What's the politically correct word?
I don't know what the politically correct word is for them. Do you have one? I could borrow it from you if you could loan it to me for a while. What I actually really think the thing to do with your skeptics is win them over. And in this process, sometimes it's not linear. I mean, it could sound linear, but you have to circle back and circle back and circle back in terms of stakeholder analysis, really walk them through what is their challenge, what are they most afraid of, what is their practice, what are their biggest pain points, and you can't just do that once and assume that they're all in. You have to do it again and again and again. It's kind of an iterative process, and really so that they feel like they're a part of the whole build. The other thing that we really have done to help override the challenges is we call it micro-customization. And we build all of our content so that it is the same across the enterprise, but we know our audience. And so we know the local baseball team, and we know the name of the street that we're on, and we know the college that's in the town, and we know the mascot. And we've done some pre-work so that we can make all of the content when we deliver it feel like it was built in the room next door. And so we really, you know, everything is 95% consistent across the country, but the stories and the antidotes and the things that you weave that make training real are all a part of the culture of that office. And I have an amazing training team that does that and does it really well, and I think it helps a lot in terms of making sure it feels like their own.
Now, when you have an organization like yours that everybody in their mind has a picture of what it is and what you do.
Sure.
And then you're in these hyper-local situations where these people take that information and they make it their own. How do you protect the brand? Like, what things do you have in place that help you kind of make sure they are on message and they are saying what you want them to say?
Well, we try to make it really easy to stay on brand and stay on point. We spend time. So if we're giving content to a staff person who's going to take it and deliver it to their 500 volunteers in the community, we make it as easy as possible to stay on brand and stay on point and stay in line with the content. We train them. We watch them. We follow up with them. We have a very large volunteer training task force called our National Leadership Training Team. So we have volunteers who are completely enrolled in line with what our learning strategy and approaches are, and they take the content out and deliver it. So they're part of the design process, they're part of the creation, and then they go and deliver it for us. So when you have that level of enrollment into what we're trying to accomplish, it makes it a lot easier for people to stay on point.
Now, if somebody isn't on point, how do you get them back on point?
Usually pretty directly. And by that, I mean, we're not rude or abrupt, but we're an organization that really believes in crucial conversations and sometimes crucial confrontations and going right at it. And, you know, what are the challenges that you're having and why are you feeling like you have to go on point? Are we missing something? Is there something lacking in the design or the delivery of the content? So let's start there. Let's diffuse the situation. Tell us why you think you need to do this. And then let's talk about what it means to do it and what the implication is to the greater training issue. And then we usually can come up with a suitable solution that makes everybody feel okay.
So I want to go back to this resistance idea. You guys used the term, or Lee did, skeptic earlier on, and really for the benefit of other organizations that are maybe trying to get a center of excellence off the ground, a centralized learning off the ground.
Yeah.
I just want to fly this idea out there. You'd certainly rather, if there's going to be some resistance, you want to make it safe enough for them to share it now.
Absolutely.
Right? You want it above ground, not underground.
Can
you
sure.
speak to is that? Yeah.
Yeah, I would think you absolutely want it above ground. You want to know. Yeah, I usually. Can identify who my biggest skeptics or challenges are at the front end, and they're one of the first or second people that I call. Uh-huh. And I bring them into the process as soon as possible, because they're also going to ask the most critical questions. And if you can't answer them, then you're going to have trouble all through the implementation. So who is your biggest skeptic? And get them in the room also with your biggest fan, with the people who are 100% in, and use those peers to leverage and influence each other. When we offered the opportunity to the American Cancer Society divisions to optionally centralize our professional development practice, the first thing we did was get a really big influencer enrolled. So our Eastern Division was the first division to join, and they were a very big division. They're one of our highest producings in terms of income and services, and they're also very influential. Their leaders are very influential among the other leaders in the organization. And so when they start telling your story and start talking about the quality of the delivery and the impact that you're having and how great it is to work with you, a lot of your skeptics might go away because they're hearing their peers who are influencers of them change their tune about what it means.
So that's a strategy for anybody out there that's thinking
Absolutely.
Of implementing that, is to get the influencer on board first.
Yep.
And embrace the skeptic in the process early on.
Absolutely.
To let them be heard.
And spend as much time with them as you need to. You can't
as
just...
As you need to. That's kind of...
Well, they might have a good idea, too. It's not all about
Absolutely.
You just reading them the way it is, right? I mean, heck,
Absolutely.
They might have a good
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, you definitely want to hear them and see, because maybe they have a different thought that you haven't thought of, or bringing right. a different perspective. That's all very healthy.
Especially early in the process. Because you want them to poke holes at it
Absolutely.
Early on.
Well, have some authorship even, maybe.
Absolutely.
Or at least some pride of... Yeah,
ownership. They're in the vision. Yeah. They're enrolled in the vision. They're part of the solution. That makes everybody happy, I think, definitely.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you're going to do this talk, and then what are you going to do for the balance of the week? You're going to walk
back,
the carpet?
Enjoy the city.
Yeah, take in the sights. I'm actually really looking forward to the keynotes. There's some great... I'm really interested in the brain science stuff. That stuff's really interesting to me. You see, we've got an actual track this year on brain science. So I'm going to take in the sessions that are interesting to me. I've got several of my team members who are actually volunteering here at ASTD, and so check in with them, make sure they're getting some value from it while they're also pointing people in the direction of the Expo Center, and really take in and enjoy the conference for all that it is.
Now, how has ASTD impacted your career? Are you active?
I am active, and I've been coming to this conference. Someone corrected me. I said 10 years, and someone corrected me last night and said, actually, we've known each other 16 years.
See, that those people are everywhere.
I know, and they're evil. Definitely ASTD has been a part of my professional growth. I've been active. I'm in and out of the state chapters where I've lived when I've lived in different states, but I've always been a big supporter of AST. This conference in particular, I think you can really dig through and find lots of really great nuggets and information, wonderful vendor partners, things that you didn't even know existed, things that you didn't know you needed. And there's lots of innovation and creativity that I think can really come out of ASTD if you go into it with a pretty wide open mind.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more about American Cancer Society in general, is website for you guys? It's important
yeah.
that everybody knows.
www.cancer.org. And you can get everything there, from signing up to volunteer to learn about the newest advanced treatments, to know what we do locally in their communities.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the broadcast. Informative, inspiring conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's been my pleasure.
All right. We will be back in a few from the show floor of ASTD ICE 2014.
This has been a special Business Radio X production brought to you by Training Pros, your source for local learning and development experts. Learn more at training-pros.com